Boeing may announce another Dreamliner delay. The Department of Transportation revives congestion pricing. And Steenland comments on a possible merger with Delta. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, January 16, 2008. Several sources, including the Wall Street Journal and Seattle Post-Intelligencer aerospace reporter James Wallace, say Boeing will announce an additional three-month delay to its 787 Dreamliner program today. Wallace adds this latest delay will move delivery of the first 787 to launch customer All Nippon Airways completely off this year's calendar and off into 2009. That time frame is in line with an earlier report in the Journal, which says Boeing continues to struggle with parts shortages and other supplier issues. Casual comments from a few customers on the waiting list suggest more delays were expected, but as late as last week, several analysts predicted the new delay would be more like 3 weeks. Boeing has done a good job so far of holding the faith of customers and most investors through the earlier six-month delay, even adding to its order book as late as Monday, when Air Pacific committed to three more Dreamliners. That job at Boeing will now get tougher. Apparently, rumors of the death of congestion pricing have been greatly exaggerated. Despite leaving the provision out of last month's compromise with airlines to fight delays at clogged New York area airports, on Monday, the Department of Transportation announced that U.S. airports nationwide will soon be allowed to charge landing fees during their busiest times. DOT Secretary Mary Peters says the new policy, once implemented, will allow airports to curb delays through imposing fees on airlines landing at airports at peak times. Anticipated benefits would be spreading traffic more evenly throughout the day, increasing utilization of underused airports elsewhere, and creating a customer incentive to buy tickets in off-peak times. Peters also noted that the fees would become another revenue source for airport improvements. Quote, airports will now be able to more efficiently and effectively finance the kinds of projects that will give travelers more options, airlines more opportunities, and cities like New York more visitors, unquote. Currently, airports can charge landing fees based only on aircraft weight. The new policy would allow a two-part fee, based partially on weight, but also including a flat per-landing component, to create an incentive to use larger planes. Despite its general support for user fees on general aviation, the Air Transport Association doesn't like this idea. ATA President and CEO James May told the Associated Press, quote, "Unfortunately, the policy does nothing to fix the primary cause of delays, our nation's increasingly antiquated air traffic control system. Additional fees will only increase the cost of flying for the consumer," unquote. Airport operators have applauded the move. Airports Council International North America President Greg Principato noted, quote, "Airport proprietors are in the best position to manage the use of the facilities they planned, financed, built, and currently operate," unquote. The proposal is open for comment from any interested party for 45 days. Less than a year ago, Delta was campaigning against a hostile takeover attempt by U.S. Airways. Now, there are reports Delta could announce a merger with another airline within a few weeks. Last week, amid analyst suggestions that U.S. airlines must consolidate or die, Delta CEO Richard Anderson asked his board of directors for permission to talk with United and Northwest about a possible merger. The Wall Street Journal is reporting he got that permission on Friday, has already begun talks, and could have a merger announcement by mid-February. Calyon Securities analyst Raymond Neidel told Forbes, "The decision will depend entirely on whether or not Delta believes such a merger is likely to pass antitrust standards." Quote, "We need a sign from Washington that they'd give their blessing," unquote. Meanwhile, over at Northwest, CEO Doug Steenland told workers last week that any decision will be made with employee input, but he also hinted at a readiness to open those talks. Steenland told the New York Times, quote, "Doing nothing could be our worst alternative. If we wait to react to what others do, we could be left with options that are undesirable or with no options at all," unquote. The U.S. Navy's final report on last year's loss of an F/A-18 and its pilot during a Blue Angels performance concludes the pilot failed to properly tense his muscles to counter the G-forces from a high-speed turn. Blue Angel No. 6, piloted by Lieutenant Commander Kevin Davis, crashed in a residential area near Marine Corps Air Station Beaufort in South Carolina, near the end of an April 21, 2007 performance. Davis's plane pulled an extremely tight turn to rejoin the formation just before the mishap. The Blue Angels fly without the benefit of G-suits, which prevent pilots from blacking out during such maneuvers by inflating air bladders against the lower body to force blood upward to the head and heart. Instead, the Blues are taught to handle the forces by tensing their abdominal and leg muscles. They have to. The FA-18 has a center-mounted stick, which could force the plane into an uncommanded attitude if pushed by an inflating air bladder. Captain Jack Hanslick, a Navy spokesman and former aviator, told the Associated Press, quote, "Kevin had performed these maneuvers in training and in the fleet. He had done them in similar situations, and he had a history of performing them well without any problems," unquote. It's thought Davis likely suffered a temporary loss of blood flow to his brain, leading to tunnel vision and disorientation. The AP obtained the accident report through a Freedom of Information Act request. Up next on ANN, the White House tries to sell Congress on selling the Saudis smart bomb technology. The University of Michigan is sued by a medevac contractor. And American Airlines says no to federal mediation with pilots. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 16th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. The idea that the U.S. would sell guided bomb technology to Saudi Arabia set off immediate opposition in Congress. Some lawmakers openly questioned whether the technology would be used against Israel. The technology allows old-fashioned dumb bombs to be upgraded to use GPS and inertial guidance for precision targeting, similar to the smart bombs which first amazed us all on TV newscasts during Desert Storm. Reuters reports that the Pentagon Tuesday moved to defuse congressional opposition by releasing details of the proposed sale, valued at $123 million. The Pentagon's Defense Security Cooperation Agency said the sale of 900 Joint Direct Attack munitions kits would improve the accuracy of Saudi bombs and help its F-15 fighters take a larger role in coalition operations. The agency says the sale will enhance training opportunities, increase Royal Saudi Air Force F-15 operational capability, sustainability, and interoperability with the U.S. Air Force and other coalition forces. The council oversees arms sales to foreign nations. The U.S. Department of State joined the sales pitch to Congress on Monday, assuring lawmakers that the U.S. has coordinated with both Israel and Saudi Arabia to ensure the weapons won't be a threat to the Jewish state. White House strategists believe they have enough votes in Congress to get approval. The operator of a Cessna Citation Bravo that crashed in Lake Michigan last June has sued the University of Michigan for over $1 million, saying the college terminated its contract after the accident without due cause. The plane hit the water about 5 minutes after takeoff from Milwaukee's General Mitchell International Airport. The lifeguard flight was chartered by the university and had two university doctors and two perfusionists on board, in addition to the two-man flight crew. The plane was also carrying human organs to Willow Run Airport in Detroit, where doctors were to perform a double lung transplant. All on board were lost. The National Transportation Safety Board has not yet released its probable cause, but ATC transcripts indicate the pilots reported runaway trim and were trying to fix the problem shortly before the crash. Just over a month after the accident, the University of Michigan canceled its contract with the operator, Marlin Air, of Belleville, Michigan, more than 2 years before it was due to expire. Scott Erskine, attorney for Marlin, asserts the university backed out without due cause. He notes the probable cause of the accident hasn't been determined by the NTSB or the FAA, and Marlin isn't accused of any wrongdoing. Quote, despite an impeccable track record, the university terminated the contract with Marlin Air shortly after the crash, citing only the tragic circumstances that resulted in the crash as the reason for termination, unquote. The university responded Monday, quote, Marlin Air did not have the ability to provide the services required by our institution, unquote. Erskine says the university canceled the contract July 13th, one day after Marlin told U of M it would have two new pilots on the transplant team by July 20th. American Airlines this week rejected a request from the Allied Pilots Association to submit to federal mediation. The Dallas Morning News reports American informed the union, quote, the company believes that remaining in joint control of the negotiation schedule and continuing direct bargaining with APA is the best course to expeditiously reach an agreement, unquote. APA asked American last week to join in its request for federal mediation, as allowed under the Railway Labor Act. Union President Lloyd Hill said mediation would be the best option, quote, to bring our contract negotiations to a prompt conclusion, unquote, after months of heated back-and-forth jabs between the two sides. In a message to pilots on Monday, APA calls American's response discouraging, quote, no substantive progress has been made in a year and a half of negotiating. Management's tactics indicate that they are more interested in delays than in creating a contract that meets the needs of the pilots, unquote. The union will now seek federal mediation over the airline's objection. Though it sounds like a step toward diplomacy, in reality, mediation would bring the two sides closer to a potential strike. A pilot strike may only be called legally if the National Mediation Board declares an impasse in mediated talks. That declaration would free American to impose its own contract terms on pilots, as the FAA did with air traffic controllers in 2006. But unlike the controllers, pilots could legally respond by striking. Janice Woodard and her infant son Josiah died on July 10th last year when a Cessna 310R, operated by NASCAR, crashed into her home and one next door in Sanford, Florida. Despite reports of smoke in the cockpit, crash scene investigators found no evidence of mechanical malfunction, and the cause of the accident remains unknown. Now, the Orlando Sentinel reports that Joe Woodard, Janice's husband, has reached a settlement with NASCAR's insurance company out of court. There were two separate claims being prepared, one each on behalf of Joe Woodard and the couple's surviving daughter, Journey. Attorney Natalie Jackson says she was approached by United States Aviation underwriters to discuss a settlement. Jackson said of her client, quote, as long as it was a fair settlement, he wanted to move on with his life. He's not a litigious person, unquote. The amount of the settlement is confidential, but Jackson says it includes compensation for pain and suffering and will more than adequately provide a college fund for Journey. Jackson also told the Sentinel Joe Woodard wants to meet with officials from Florida A&M University's law school, where Janice had taken classes, to create a scholarship for working mothers in her name. This settlement doesn't end the story. U.S. Aviation Underwriter says at least one more claim is expected, from the couple in the house next door, which also burned. Peter DeShott was severely burned and required months of treatment. His 10-year-old stepson Daniel is still at the Shriners Burns Hospital in Cincinnati. His 4-year-old daughter Gabriella died in the crash. Still ahead, DOT says the airline business recovery continued in November. The FAA bestows an unwelcome distinction on the Philippines. And the Rocket Racing League breaks ground in Las Cruces. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, January 16, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. Short-term economic forecasts are getting ugly. Oil prices remain high, and housing's in a slump. But so far, the recovery of U.S. airlines from their post-9/11 doldrums is continuing unabated. The latest hiring figures from the U.S. Department of Transportation's Bureau of Transportation Statistics shows the airlines employed 3.7% more full-time equivalent workers in November 2007 than a year earlier. The news marked the 10th consecutive increase in full-time equivalent employee levels for the scheduled passenger carriers. American enjoyed the most FTEs in November among the network carriers. Southwest led the low-cost carriers, and SkyWest employed the most among regionals. A complete breakdown of the BTS findings is available through a link in the print version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration is lumping Philippine airline operations in with company they'd probably rather avoid. The AP quotes the U.S. Embassy in reporting the FAA has the industry under close scrutiny in the Philippines for inadequate safety standards. The so-called Category 2 designation puts the Philippines on a list with Bangladesh, the Ivory Coast, Ghana, and Indonesia. At this point, the only carrier in that country serving the U.S. is Philippine Airlines. The Philippine government does not have a body exactly equivalent to the FAA, or to what other countries call their civil aviation authorities. Daniel D. Magiba, the head of the Philippine Air Transportation Office, says pending legislation would create a CAA and provide $24 million in funding needed for upgrades to air traffic control infrastructure. The Philippine Congress has already approved the bill, but it's still awaiting the signature of President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo. AP was unable to reach anyone in the Arroyo government for comment. For now, the FAA is not providing any details on just what led to the Category 2 designation, only urging U.S. travelers to fly only on carriers which meet the standards of the International Civil Aviation Organization. On the FAA's website, Category 2 is technically defined as lacking laws or regulations necessary to support the certification and oversight of air carriers in accordance with minimum international standards. The Rocket Racing League broke ground Monday on the first phase of the RRL Aerospace Business Park. Phase 1 includes the construction of two hangars at the east end of Las Cruces International Airport. The hangars, which are scheduled for completion by May, are part of a 20-year lease agreement between Rocket Racing League and the city for six 100,000-square-foot parcels at the airport. These hangars will house the aircraft and teams competing in the league, in addition to league aircraft-related operations. With more than 300 acres of development planned, the business park will not only serve industry, but will evolve into a destination for fans visiting a Rocket Racing League museum, Hall of Fame, education centers, and other attractions. Rocket Racing League CEO Granger Whitelaw noted, quote, "Indianapolis, Indiana is the home of the IRL. Charlotte, North Carolina is the home of NASCAR. And now, Las Cruces, New Mexico is the home of Rocket Racing," unquote. Careful now, guys. No swapping paint in turn three. And finally, it's been a while since we had one of these. Several dozen people around the small North Texas town of Stephenville say they saw something very unusual in the skies last week, and they want to know what it was. Business owner and pilot Steve Allen saw it, quote, "It was positively, absolutely nothing from these parts," unquote. Allen described the UFO as being a mile long, a half mile wide, with several bright lights and eerily quiet. That matches accounts by other residents, some of whom add it was being trailed by fighter aircraft. A spokesman for the 301st Fighter Wing in Fort Worth says there's a perfectly logical explanation. What people saw was an illusion created by two commercial airliners converging at a common point relative to the ground near sunset. Major Carl Lewis added no fighters assigned to NASJRB Fort Worth were in that area at the time, and officials with two other bases made similar statements. Machinist Ricky Sorrells doesn't buy it. He says he saw the metallic object hovering about 300 feet over a pasture near his home in Dublin. He kept quiet initially after the few friends he told made fun of him, but he came forward after reading about other sightings in the Stephenville Empire Tribune. Quote, "It feels good to hear that other people saw something because that means I'm not crazy," unquote. No, actually, Ricky, in logic, that's what we call a quantum leap. You know, really, I shouldn't kid around because I know this UFO stuff is for real. You want proof? Drive by Area 51 sometime and watch what being near alien technology does to your GPS. Uh-huh. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check the ANN special feature. Today, it's reporter Q&A with CEO Vern Rayburn from Eclipse Aviation's Monday press conference. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.